You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of a collected work by Rudolf Steiner, number 314, entitled Physiology and Healing. This is part 5, entitled Aspects of Psychiatry, and I'm going to call it Lecture 14, however it's just question and answers, but to keep the numbering of the system convenient. So this, in quotes, Lecture 14, which is question and answers, was given in Dornach on the 26th of March, 1920. This subject would need to be considered exhaustively if we wanted to tackle it at all. Today we can only make some brief references, for the study of psychiatry undoubtedly needs the most thorough revision, especially in our day. Just consider the way it is really impossible today to know what issues need to be addressed in psychiatry, and you'll soon realize the great need for reform. This will not be possible, or so it seems to me after hearing Dr. Husemann speak, unless spiritual science truly renders the individual specialized subject areas fruitful first. The development of science, so beautifully described by Dr. Husemann today, a development which began and reached its height in the 19th century, has really driven the whole of human thinking apart in two directions that are extreme opposites. On the one hand, there are the ideas people have of the material world and its processes. And on the other hand, we have the life of thought as such, which, I'd say, has become progressively more abstract in character. Abstractions have no power in the world, nor have they any power in human beings, and offer no possibility for human beings to grasp matter, the physical world, out of the psyche, to build a bridge somehow between the psyche and the material world. Today people have at best an idea of a sum of abstractions or abstract sentiments and the like when they speak of the psyche. This sum of abstractions clearly cannot set an organism in motion, nor build some kind of bridge to the organism. It, therefore, also cannot be said that we can somehow influence the outer physical real organism through the psyche, doing so with something which is but a sum of abstractions. On the other hand, knowledge has been gained in science of the physical organism. It is pure fiction to say the phenomena of the psyche are but parallels to, or indeed due to, activities of the physical organism. None of the actual ideas developed concerning this physical organism are such that one might squeeze anything out of them by way of ideas concerning the psyche. As a result, we have a view of the inner life, irrespective of whether one is more or less of a materialist, where one looks only on abstractions, and side by side with it a view of physical life, organic life, that will not in any way yield anything relating to mind and spirit. It is only natural, really, that a method that would serve psychiatry is not easy to find. This is also why people have most recently ceased to talk in any way about the connection between the physical, organic aspect of the human being, on the one hand, and the psyche as a process in the conscious mind, on the other. As we are truly in constant danger of sitting between the two chairs, the physical and material, and the abstract and psychic, it has been necessary to invent a wholly unconscious world, a world that is both strange and unconscious. This has been done in psychoanalysis, analytical psychology, a scientific subject that is really extraordinarily interesting. Once psychiatry has been reformed, so that we shall again have a proper psychiatry, this scientific subject will have to be thoroughly tested from the new psychiatric standpoint, for it is really an object for psychiatry. To avoid ending up on the floor between these two chairs, attempts have thus been made to discern an unconscious world. I am not against the unconscious world, of course, but it has to be investigated, truly recognized, using the vision introduced in spiritual science. One cannot fantasize, dream it up in the way Freudians or others like them do. Spiritual science will contribute to a reform of psychiatry in taking us from merely abstract concepts that have no life in them to concepts that are in accord with reality, concepts which already live in the world as concepts and are gained by entering wholly into reality with our methods. Rising to such spiritual methods, which on their part provide concepts that are in accord with reality, we will be able to make the transition to actual reality. It means that we will be able to build a bridge between psyche and physical body. The psyche and the physical body must look different in our mind to what they look like today, if we seriously want to have a psychiatry. Today's sum of abstractions, including all the abstract laws of nature, they are filtered more and more, these laws of nature, cannot enter fully into a process that is real. Just imagine how, with the abstractions that figure in science today, one might actually find something like the two important facts, as I am right to call them, for they are facts, of which I spoke in the first lecture in this series, the thesis, grounded in spiritual science, of cardiac function, and the basic biogenetic law being reversed for the historical development of events on Earth. Examples like this show that the methods used in spiritual science truly allow one to find one's way into the world of facts, doing so out of the inner life of the psyche, to build a bridge from the, in quotes, mental to the, in quotes, physical, as they are called. This is particularly necessary in psychiatry, for we will only get somewhere once we are able to observe the relevant facts in the right way. And the facts of psychiatry are essentially even harder to observe because they call for greater freedom from bias than the facts relating to the effects of physical laws. Essentially, there is practically no way of isolating the human being completely as soon as we come from health, relative health, to relative sickness. The human being does indeed develop into a single individual, an isolated life. He does this exactly through his soul development, S-O-U-L, but it is through something which in the psyche deviates from linear development. Anything which deviates from the linear development, which we call normal, in quotes, in the physical aspect, parenthesis, I can, of course, only make brief reference, otherwise one would have to go on for hours going into detail, close parenthesis, is not something which we can consider in isolation. Human beings are much more social creatures, also in the deeper sense, than we tend to think. And actual mental diseases can only in the rarest instances be assessed according to, let us say, the biography of the individual in isolation. This is practically impossible. I'd like to use a hypothetical example to indicate what I really mean. You see, it is possible, for example, that two people live side by side in a community, be it a family or some other kind of community. One of them has the misfortune, after some time, to suffer an episode, something classified as belonging to the field of psychiatry. Now, it is, of course, possible to treat that individual in isolation. But if you do this, especially if you base your view on a study of this individual in isolation, you will, in many cases, really just fall victim to a thought mask. For the situation may well be, and this is so in many cases, that someone else who lives in the family or other kind of community with the sick individual really has the complex of powers, as we may call it, in him, which has led to the mental condition of the other person. Considering these two people, initially we have this. A has the episode, from the psychiatric point of view. B has a complex of powers in him that is psychic and organic by nature. If we were to consider him on his own, he might probably show the element, which in the case of A, we call the cause of the illness to a much greater degree. It means that B, who has no evident mental problem, has much more of the cause of this mental condition in him than A, who had to be taken to a clinic. This is something which is wholly in the sphere of reality, and not just conjecture. It is based on the fact that apart from the complex of powers, considered to be the cause of his mental condition, A has a weak constitution, and does not tolerate this complex of powers. The other person, B, who also has that complex of powers in him, has a much stronger constitution than the other. It does not harm him. B tolerates it. A does not. A would not have developed the condition if he had not been constantly influenced mentally by B, who lives next to him. B's influence would be extraordinarily great, because he is more robust than A. Here you have an example which is a reality in a great many cases. You see how important the psychiatric way of looking at things is, if the aim is to consider things that are real rather than playing around, which is often done in this field today. It really is a matter of not looking at a person in isolation, but in the whole of his social environment. What I mean to say here must, however, be put on a very broad basis, for it also applies in all other pathology that there is a great difference between a weak individual affected by some complex or other, and a strong, robust individual. Let us assume two people live side by side from a certain age onward. One still has the robust country person's nature due to his young years and his origins. The other comes from three generations of nothing but town people. The one with the healthy countryman's nature, who is well able to cope with inner damage, may perhaps bear much more of a complex in him, but he tolerates it and does not fall ill. The other, who only has the complex because of psychic infection, by imitation, due to the things that always exist between people, is not able to cope with its influence. Here you see everything that needs to be considered if you want to talk about psychiatry, not in theory and in terms of programs, but on the basis of reality. Now is the time to be serious, realizing that essentially our scientists have grown so one-sided, especially from the time of Galileo. And there is need to take in new things that will make science fruitful in all fields. Otherwise, human insight must fall into utter decadence, especially so in the areas that are to take us into practical life. I might thus say that basically the same holds true for psychiatry as for the things we say when talking about the Waldorf School and speaking of the art of education, that one should not just come up with some new formulations of a theoretical nature, but take the living science of the spirit itself into this field. What may be said about the field of education must also be said about the field of psychiatry. We will certainly never be able to say in a biased way, this or that needs to be improved in psychiatry. No, we must come to accept the idea that either we accept the spiritual scientific basis altogether in the search for insight, and it will certainly change psychiatry, making something particularly of psychiatry, which so many people are truly longing for today, though it cannot be found with the latest natural scientific methods, of which you have heard a great deal both yesterday and today. You see, what must above all result when spiritual science becomes popular, to use a commonplace term, is a much, much better insight into the nature of the human being than any found today. People relate to one another in such a way, today, that one simply cannot speak of insight. They pass each other by. Everyone lives for himself. Spiritual science will make people open to one another. And much which today is perhaps still thought to be in the field of mental pathology will with this be driven across into the field of mental hygiene. For the situation is I'd say that straight currents may be traced everywhere from the syndromes of disrupted mental life to the ideas, often accepted as a matter of course in public life, which are not considered pathological at all, but are indeed generally accepted. If we were to follow up some of the concepts which are so generally accepted, we would find that more slowly, perhaps, but nevertheless, the same route has been followed as that used to trace an abnormal mental syndrome, though it then progresses speedily in someone whom people consider mentally abnormal today. It is evident from all this that ultimately all the talk about details in reforming individual sciences does not give us much. But if one decided, sadly souls, many souls are too sleepy today, to look for scientific life to be made fruitful in terms of spiritual science, then all kinds of different fields in science, and especially the field where various deviations from normal mental life are considered, psychiatry, would suffer an automatic reform, as I'd like to put it. Even if such cases go in the direction of the most extreme rebellion, raving madness, feeble-mindedness, and so on, we will only discover what these mental aberrations from normal life signify within the whole of normal development. And we shall, in many respects, find that if our philosophy of life grows progressively more sound, many of the unhealthy public errors that cast their light into the pathological aberrations of the mentally ill will grow sound. For it is absolutely remarkable how difficult it is to draw a clear boundary between normal life, in quotes, as it is called, and abnormal mental life. It is difficult to say, for instance, if a normal mental state pertained in a case that happened not far from here, in Basel, not that long ago. A man bequeathed a large sum in his will to anyone who would shut himself up in complete isolation until he succeeded in establishing that the soul is truly immortal. Someone in Basel wrote that will, and I do not know what happened after that. I think his heirs raised objections and sought to get a decision, not psychiatric but legal, as to how far this goes toward the psychiatric or not. However, if you, every single one of you, set out to investigate if this is a matter for psychiatry, or a whim, or indeed excessive religiosity, or whatever, you'll hardly arrive at anything that is wholly accurate. It is very much the case that our concepts have grown feeble as compared to reality. They need to grow strong again, but they will only gain strength with spiritual science, and psychiatry will be one field among many where people will grow aware of this. That is the end of this, in quotes, lecture 14, which was a question and answers on psychiatry.